Oh, it is snowing. Definitely snowing. I am enjoying myself in the winter weather. As you can see, I got my heater out there. Not sure how much use that's going to be, but I'll do my best regardless. So, yeah, Acolyte Q&A, December 2023. For those of you who are not familiar with this stream, Acolyte members submit their questions, and I answer them on this live stream, so you all can gain the benefit of the answers to their questions. If you would like to become an Acolyte member to get your questions answered in this stream and streams like it, we're doing at least one stream a month for Q&A. All you have to do is get in on our super dope Cyber Week promotion that we're doing right now, where you get Journeyman, Acolyte, and 30 minutes of coaching for $300 right now. And that is at csjoseph.life/essentials. That's csjoseph.life/essentials. Gives you the essentials. Speaking of which, we are going to be making some changes to Journeyman and Acolyte for next year, so stay tuned on that as well. Going to be adding a lot more value to Acolyte because more and more people are getting into the Acolyte level, and it's going to be pretty awesome when that comes down to it. So, also for those of you that are not aware of it, but season 14 and season 19, season 14 part one, which is the Golden Pair Lectures, and the season 19, which is cognitive development, personal growth, or how to reach enlightenment as the 16 types, is going to be added to the Journeyman membership. And the Discover the 16 Types will no longer be made available for sale. So if you want to get in on that, csjoseph.life/discover, so you can get grandfathered in. I highly recommend that. Or just get yourself our course, Ego Hacking Your Fear, at egohackingyourfear.com, or our new course, which is about to release, get your pre-order in, howtotypeyourself.com. Check that out as well. Thank you for my intro. Don't worry, I'll be doing plenty more sales plugs during the show as necessary. But I have prepared tonight's questions, so let's just get right down to the Q&A. So, first question of the night is, what is TE plus FI and FE plus TI attraction? Very interesting question. How these types actually get in a relationship? How are they actually attracted to one another? Fascinating. I'm gonna get my mittens on here. Because it is cold. Well below freezing, and it is dumping snow right now, so good times to live in the north, if I do say so myself. So TI, or it's kind of interesting. It depends if you're a man or a woman, because that has like a different slant on the functions. Extroverted thinking women are really all about being all about being good listeners. Basically, that's how they prove their femininity to men. It's by being good listeners. If they are extroverted feelers as women, then they are all about being caring, very outwardly caring, towards their man in their life. So naturally, a TIFE user man would be attracted to a woman who's very caring, as a result of that. And but most of all, he actually really wants to be listened to. So the extroverted thinking from a woman matches with the TI male. So TI male plus TE female. TE female acts like she's all about listening to the TI male, and the TI male is committed to solving problems and being a problem solver. Conversely, if it is an introverted feeling male who's all about leading, and especially leading when it comes to decision making, he's not necessarily looking for his TIFE woman to solve his problems. What he is looking for is her to just care about him and be very come off very caring towards him, and that's ultimately like the center of the attraction between decision making functions, also known as judgment functions, which is TEFI and FETI. you want to learn more about that concept, you can learn about that in the Cutting Edge November 2023, where we talk about UCT, also known as Universal Compatibility Theory, which is the biggest discovery in the science that we've had since the octagram. The octagram basically lines up what people are learning about human nurture and how that creates various sub-variants of the 16 types. Because of that, there's 64 variants of men of the 16 types total, and 64 variants of women, with a total of 128 different types, basically, within this model. But they are variants, and those variants can change. So while there is a total of 128 different available cognitive positions within Jungian analytical psychology and the four sides dynamics, still, nature trumps nurture. So really knowing their type and how their type acts as a man or a woman is absolutely critical. So you want to learn universal compatibility theory. To do that, just become a member, stagejoseph.life/members, or get in on our amazing promotion where you can get journeyman membership, acolyte membership, and 30 minutes of coaching for $300 right now. stagejoseph.life/essentials. See, I told you, I do another sales plug. So next question, what does the silver pair respect relationship look like? So basically what it looks like is you have the hero function basically trying its hardest to interface with the parent function of the other person. And also the child function is interfacing with the inferior function of the other person, and they both do that to each other. The thing is, though, is that this creates a system of soft locking where they will soft lock each other into each other's subconscious. And this is pretty excellent because the respect relationship actually galvanizes the two people within the relationship from the perspective of trying to encourage the other to be as aspirational as possible. So respect relationships, because they soft lock each other into each other's subconscious, actually leads to higher aspirational growth and eventually leads to a focus out there. It is insanely mutually beneficial. I don't often talk about the silver pair relationship. It's likely why this question was even asked as part of the acolytes is basically for that reason. I don't really often talk about it. I should actually do a series about it because the main theme is that they're able to reach the higher level of aspiration. So I think we probably might do that in the very near future for the journeyman membership, maybe right after the social skills premium lecture series. We might actually just launch right into the next part of season 14, which I believe would be season 14, part 5, which is the silver pairs. And again, if you want to get all of season 14, make sure you are at least a journeyman membership starting at the beginning of next year. So January 1, we're going to be adding season 14 to the complete season 14 to the journeyman section. How tall is Chase? Well, I mean, I don't know. When I measured myself in my 20s, it was 5 feet and 10 and a half inches. But I've had people tell me recently that, hey, man, I'm 5'11", and you're taller than me, so maybe I am actually 6 feet. I have no idea. I have no clue. So at least 5 foot, 10 and a half, 2'6", in that range. I have no idea. I've never really bothered or cared. So I'm not going to care, so I don't. So yeah, that's basically what the silver pair relationship is based on, and it's a relationship of treating each other with high regard and a high level of respect, which ultimately leads to them aspiring with their inferior functions because they're soft locking each other into each other's subconscious, and this is one of the ways that the respect relationship actually guides them into a higher level self. Shout out to Yuri, by the way. Yuri, I gotta say that in the ESFP lecture, for the premium lectures, which should be posted right after this stream in the journeyman section. I gave you tons of shout outs in that episode. So that episode is dedicated to you, Mr. Yuri, just throwing that out there. So the next question is, what is valuable for ENTP effort? And this is kind of a weird question. What is valuable for ENTP effort? Maximum effort. No one puts in more effort than ENTPs. Let's be honest. They actually have a tendency to be able to outwork everyone as they aspire with their ISFJ subconscious. If they too were in a silver pair with an ENTJ, they would be. They would develop an insanely high work ethic very quickly as they learn to aspire with their ISFJ subconscious as they continue to be, soft locked into their subconscious, which is pretty cool. It's pretty cool that that ends up happening. But honestly, like anything can be valuable for ENTP effort because ENTPs aren't going to forget what they put their effort into. And even if certain things are not related to certain other things in an ENTP's life, eventually that life experience will compound. So basically, I recommend, you know, as ENTPs do, because Ryan Reynolds is an ENTP and Deadpool is an ENTP, maximum effort. Definitely put in maximum effort into things and learn and constantly experiment and learn from your mistakes. Not learning from mistakes is the ENTP downfall, basically, because you can only learn from your own mistakes anyway. And if you're not willing to go from there, if you're not willing to gain that life experience or like venture into the unknown and just basically try everything, do everything, but at maximum effort, then you're not really going to have an opportunity to experiment. And without that experimentation, you're not actually going to learn because you can only learn from your own mistakes. So basically, the most valuable thing that ENTP could put their effort towards is ultimately failure. You have to get comfortable with failure. And through being comfortable with failure, you yourself have an opportunity to learn from that failure. And eventually, those 1,000 failures of all your experimentation, because you can only learn from your own mistakes, those 1,000 mistakes basically will lead to 1,000 successes eventually. So, and that's really good there. Next question is, what is key for INFJ detachment? Simple word, surrender. Literally, surrender. You need to get to a point where you're willing to surrender. Because, and most INFJs don't want to surrender, especially INFJ women, for example. They really have a hard time surrendering, but surrender is really the key to INFJ success. And this is heavily explored in our course at egohackingyourfear.com. Speaking of which, we are doing our Cyber Week sale right now on Ego Hacking Your Fear, and you can get the course and the masterclass in a bundle at offers.csjoseph.life/HTTY-EYF. HTTY-EYF. If you go to that link, you can basically get the course for half off in a bundle with the masterclass, which is pretty awesome. It's the best price we ever offered it at. But in this course, we talk about the INFJ need to learn how to surrender. And through surrendering, it allows them to actually let go of their attachments because INFJs need to avoid attachment at all costs. Absolutely have to. Because attachment, that's where the INFJ ends up becoming drained because they're giving so much to other people and it's not a true bond where they're receiving just as much, if not more, than what they're putting in other people. And INFJs need to learn how to measure this, which is really hard for them because they have extroverted thinking trickster. They can't really measure worth a shit, let's be honest. But how they can get around this is basically they have to organize every single person in their life, every single relationship that they have, attachment or bond or whatever, from this perspective. And that perspective is curse versus blessing. A curse is when you get less out of something than what you put into it. A blessing is when you get more out of it than what you put into it, right? And that ultimately is the source of that. Those dogs are barking in the background because of me. Because they can hear me from up here, and the sound carries down to them. They're like, what the hell is going on? Oh, I'm going to bark at Chase. All them barking dogs, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Their owners are pissed. Yelling at them. Wow. But, yeah, that's ultimately the key for INFJ detachment. You really need to look at who is a curse in your life versus who is a blessing. But the reality of the situation is that you have to be thankful for what you have. You have to be grateful for what you have. That way you're not being jealous of the wrong people or jealous of the wrong things. It's absolutely critical. And that way you surrender to gratitude instead of surrendering to jealousy, basically. And that will help you as an INFJ move forward in your life, as it is insanely required and insanely necessary. So make sure you're doing that as an INFJ. And that's what I would say is a key for INFJ attachment or detachment. But honestly, like, get into the INFJ section of the Ego Hacking Your Fear course. When you're in the course, go into section 4. Watch the first video in section 4. Don't just skip to the INFJ section. Watch the first video, because it will give you a roadmap of how to actually go through specific lectures, because each lecture that's within one of your four sides of the mind, like the Soul Temple lectures basically within section 4, are all still relevant to the INFJ. So you really need to actually get the most out of the course. You really need to pay attention to the first video and follow those instructions exactly to get the most out of section 4. And that's basically video 0 of section 4. So check that out. So the next question is, what martial arts should an ENTJ acquire? This is kind of a silly question. Honestly, whatever martial art is available around you, that's the first answer to that question. However, I would recommend offensive styles instead of defensive styles. And the most offensive styles that I know of are Muay Thai as well as Krav Maga. Very NT styles. So you as an ENTJ would actually benefit the most, because you get to use your NI parent to its maximum, as well as your introverted feeling aspiration and your systematic interaction style to be able, or worldview, excuse me, to be able to get the most out of those styles. So I highly, highly recommend Muay Thai or Krav Maga. Now, I do know an ENTJ who is particularly skilled at Wing Chun Kung Fu, but above that, there's Jeet Kune Do, which is Bruce Lee's style. And while it's technically an ENTP style, I have noticed ENTJs be very successful at style, but good luck finding a teacher who actually can train Jeet Kune Do properly, because it's a dying style. And there's not really many people teaching it, and it really should be taught, because it's an incredible style, insanely incredible style. So it's an amalgamation of many styles, and it's also really, really good. So I highly, highly recommend that. Next question is, what role in Jungian psychology does ego death play? Oh my God. Ego death, at least how it's understood colloquially, is a myth. Okay, you do not want ego death at all. Ego death is actually stupid. And I'm sure a ton of you like listening to Eckhart Tolle, the INFP who's constantly talking about ego death. And he's basically just projecting himself onto everybody else when he talks about ego death. What he's saying from his perspective as an INFP is that I have FI, I make decisions based on my mood. Oh, I have SI child. So I'm placing my comfort and how I feel, my feelings and my comfort over everyone else. So I have a really big ego, and I have the deadly sin of pride because I'm in the mind temple. So I need to let go of that. So I need to succumb to ego death to let go of that, so I can have better relationships and a better life in general. Sure, that's pretty cool for an INFP to listen to, but his whole label of ego death is entirely bullshit. What you guys need to actually do is, from a Jungian analytical psychology perspective, you need to learn how to integrate all of the four sides of your mind. And the best way of doing that is mastering your guidance functions and your gateway functions. Again, this is heavily covered in the Ego Hacking Your Fear course. Take the course, okay? EgoHackingYourFear.com. Take the course. Understand. Learn. It is the sequel to Season 19, which is personal growth and personal development, cognitive integration. And honestly, if you can watch both Season 19, watch it as the prequel, which, by the way, if you buy Ego Hacking Your Fear, you get Season 19 automatically, which is pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. And then go understand exactly what that is. You know, so go watch Season 19 first so you get prepped for the course. And then go watch the entire course at Ego Hacking Your Fear. And you'll learn how to not do ego death. Because ego death is bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. How to type yourself, we'll be releasing either a week from tonight or the following Friday. We're not entirely sure yet. We're working on that. I would like to release it sooner than later, but we're just trying to make sure that the quality of the course is ready. But I would say that it's going to be released sometime over the next 2 weeks. We will be keeping you guys informed on how to type yourself as a course. It is going to be an incredible course. I'm going to be exposing a lot of my secrets, including actually having sample coaching sessions in the course. You actually get to watch me coach people and how I psychoanalyze them and all the information that I do within the confines of that course. It's incredible. And you'll be able to use like those tools, and I walk you through our tools and how I use the tools and what I look for. And we're even going to be touching on visual typing. And the masterclass is going to be incredible as well. Another Q&A session, except you can actually like bring people into the masterclass that you would like to be typed, like on video chat and whatnot. And we might be working together as a group to psychoanalyze people to those who actually record it. It's going to be a live stream. It'll be recorded, and everyone will be able to check it out afterwards. So you're going to want to get that. HowToTypeYourself.com. Get your pre-order in now. And then as soon as you get pre-order in, you'll have an opportunity to purchase access to the masterclass as well immediately following. Get both. Seriously. Get both. So yeah. So if you're the same gender and you're in the same dyad, like for example, an ESFJ or an INTP, how would this friendship play out? What benefits would they actually have for each other? Well, that's really easy. Your dyad, according to the temples, your temple dyad is basically known as your conflict types. These are your conflict types. And what is the most important role that your conflict type can play for you? Well, a mentor. So if you're friends with your conflict type, which is easier for women to do because it's a camaraderie-based relationship, and they actually can receive some insanely good mentorship from someone who is their conflict type, because of the high camaraderie, they can basically identify with each other. And because they're identifying with each other, they're able to compare notes and actually make each other stronger through matron energy, which is absolutely incredible. Matron energy comes from king, warrior, magician, lover, but the female version is queen, mother, matron, lover. And that is available for free. You can learn about that for free on our YouTube channel here or on the podcast. It's the season 13 playlist. The Queen Archetype video is probably one of the more controversial videos I've ever produced. Just check out those comments. Lots of anger there, but I'm telling the truth. Check that out. But yes, the answer is mentorship. Now, if you can find a man who is friends with their conflict type and they have that mentorship relationship, which is extremely rare for men to do, those are very strong men. Very strong, very socially capable men. Those are men who are, that's an area, like a way that women could actually judge men as whether or not they're high value or not, based on whether or not they actually have any strong male relationships with their conflict type, straight up. So check that out. It's a really, really big deal. Woo! This, I had to get rid of that ash there because that was going to explode in my hand in a second. It's getting pretty toasty. So yeah. So what is the difference between, next question, what is the difference between a subconscious focused or unconscious focused INTP? It's pretty easy. Okay, what's the conflict type again? So conflict types, so I'm an ENTP, so my conflict type is an ESFJ. Basically, I am in a quadra known as the Crusaders. I'm an extroverted crusader, and it's the other extroverted crusader is my conflict type. If I was in the Templar quadra and I was an introverted Templar, like I as an ISTP, the other introverted Templar, the INFJ, would be my conflict type, basically. So that's how you find what type is your conflict type, to answer that question right there in the stream. That was a relevant question. Thank you for asking. Guys, if you ask relevant questions to the questions that I'm answering, I'll typically answer them right out of the stream chat to give additional context to get an even better answer. So don't feel free to indulge yourselves. All right. So then, what's the difference between a subconscious focused or unconscious focused INTP? Basically, the unconscious focused INTP is very gluttonous. Everyone knows they're very gluttonous, basically. Whereas the subconscious focused INTP sees them as a very generative, hardworking person. And it's literally just external judgments that people have of these INTPs. That is the primary difference, right? And if they're unconscious focused with their outwardly gluttonous, they really like it when other people are generative to them and generative for them, basically. So they suck up other people's generativity and then consume other people's generativity because they're very gluttonous. Whereas the subconscious focused INTP is the opposite. They only allow themselves to be gluttonous only after first that they have been generative for other people. So keep that in mind. Next question. What is... All right, can you guys hear me now? Let me know if you guys can hear me. Are you good? Better? Yeah, my microphone died. Sorry. Apparently these don't like the cold very much. So, I'm gonna continue with just the bass. All right. So, ESTJ or ENFJ, like colloquially, like, ESTJs are seen as more masculine in a man, colloquially, but that's not actually true. What we learned with Universal Compatibility Theory as presented in the Cutting Edge podcast episode for November 2023, which is available in the Journeyman membership, specifically in the Journeyman membership, we talk, you always have access to all the cutting edge episodes there. We got years of cutting edge podcast episodes where I'm talking about like the cutting edge of the science, what's new, what's coming out, etc. In that particular, we talk about UCT, universal compatibility theory, which is the concept of functions versus masculine functions. And depending on a person's octogram, so whatever of the four octogram variants this ESTJ man is, or whatever four octogram variants this ENFJ man is, really depends on their level of masculinity. My theory is that if they are subconscious focused, whichever of the two is subconscious focused is technically more masculine than the other. But even then, that might not actually be true because, like, for example, I know an ENTP who's UDUF, Mr. Wright, one of our mods on the Ego Hacker server, and I find him very masculine, actually. And I find him far more masculine than some of the other ENTPs on the server, like the SUF ENTPs, typically. So... But the bottom line is that I think technically over time, I think colloquially, people just assume that subconscious focused men in general are actually more masculine. No, it's not obsolete. It's entirely relevant, actually. UCT just goes into the level an additional layer of compatibility that you had that we didn't have before, which basically leads to a whole new level of social engineering as well. And I'm going to be discussing UCT in terms of compatibility in the upcoming course, Real Love Language, which will be our premier course that we'll be launching probably around just before Valentine's Day, basically. And it's gonna be a huge, huge course. It's probably probably the best work that we've ever done other than ego hacking your fear and how to type yourself. It's gonna be an incredible course. You guys are gonna wanna get in it when it comes out. So yeah. But cognitive synchronicity is entirely relevant, which is season 5, and it is available on YouTube for free or on the podcast for free. You can find us on Spotify if you don't know that. So yeah, but in general, my answer to the question, which type is more masculine, ESTJ or ENFJ, it just depends on which one's subconscious focus would be basically my lame duck answer, my simple answer. But really, it just really depends. It really depends on like what masculinity actually is. You know, are you putting yourself above others? Are you leaning into your masculine idealism? Are you bringing both alpha and beta traits to the table simultaneously? Alpha traits being physical prowess, the ability to potentially end another man's life, essentially. Do you have fitness? Are you physically fit? Are you willing to put self above tribe when you need to? Versus the beta traits, which is parental investment, provisioning, and protection. Basically do all of those things simultaneously.
No, not necessarily. I've known a lot of UDUF men who are actually not really masculine. And while it seems like they exhibit more dark triad traits, I would actually state that I would actually contend that UDSF men probably have the most dark triad traits, actually. That's a discussion of debate, really. It's debatable. I'll say it's debatable. I don't want to really, you know, make any prescriptions about that at this time. And honestly, I think that's debatable. Next question. Which type was Satan? Oh my God. What a question. Which type was Satan? Colloquially, people consider Satan to either be an ENFP or an ENTP, basically. And based on all the ancient lore relating to Lucifer, most people would actually believe that Satan is the ENTP archetype above them all. And I think it's because of the deadly sin of envy, which is the deadly sin of bitterness, and Satan being bitter that all of a sudden God has the son, is giving everything over to his son, when Lucifer was the leader of the angels and the top dog of the angels and leading worship with his music for the angels before the throne of Almighty God, etc. And then that bitterness basically led to the fall because he basically went unconscious focused. But that's assuming that angels have similar psyches as us, which is an assumption. We don't know. I mean, angels are made of fire and wind, whereas human beings are made of earth and water primarily. Yet our souls and our central nervous system is basically electrical systems, which is fire and wind, which is their bodies are primarily made of fire and wind, where their souls are basically little tiny molecules of earth and water, you know, for their bodily composition. Which I state that theory, by the way, but it's a really, really good theory compared to everything else out there based on my research on celestial beings and ancient lore. So it could be a thing. And yeah, vainglory as a deadly sin could also be attributed along with that envy as well. So I would say in terms of what type was Satan or is Satan, it's likely, assuming that angels have similar to human psyches, basically. So that's kind of where it is. I am not sure about how I'm going to answer that question, Kia. Sorry, I'd like to answer that question, but I just don't really know enough about that to really give that question very you know, with heedance. Yeah, I would like to try, but I just don't know. But Kia, actually, honestly, Mr. Wright, best person to ask that. He might know a lot more about that and may actually be able to answer you. So I recommend you actually take that question to him. So the next question is, why do ESFJs often try to make you feel guilty or sorry? What a question. And I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of inconsistencies when it comes to the one true God. When you're talking about Satan being a jinn, the one true God, which is also known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, according to the Jewish belief system with the Torah, or the Christian belief system with the Injil, or the Muslim belief system through the Quran. At the end of the day, you know, Yahweh is the one true God, essentially. And, you know, from that perspective, you know, people have different labels and different interpretations, and there's a lot of contradictions in there. So it's really hard to make that claim per se. But, you know, when it comes to Quranic teaching, they state that it's a correction. But I'm not entirely sure I personally agree with it being a correction yet, because there's a couple of inconsistencies that I have issues with. Like, for example, a question that I would ask at the mosque, ask the imam, it's like, okay, well, from this perspective, you know, why does the prophet have to receive a message from Gabriel when previously the one true God would speak to prophets directly without an intermediary. And then you also have Joseph Smith making a similar claim that he spoke to an angel, and that's where he received his revelation, which became ultimately the Mormon Church and the LDS Church. So there's a lot of things that are up for debate, basically, when it comes to understanding Abrahamic-related religious belief systems. So I would just recommend critical thinking of the Torah, critical thinking of the Bible, the Injil, critical thinking in the Quran, as well as a hadith. I think that is very necessary. So I err on the side of caution and try to utilize critical thinking as far as those belief systems go. Why do ESFJ often try to make you feel guilty or sorry? Well, it's because they are trying to get sympathy, and ESFJs oftentimes see sympathy as a reward. And if they make you feel bad, it's because they're trying to get you to feel sympathy. They want you to feel good about them, because if they're not getting enough gratitude from you with their Effie Hero is always trying to mine people for gratitude, basically. If they aren't going to get that gratitude, then they're going to make you feel bad about yourself instead, because they're like, why am I contributing to you, but you're not feeling good about my contributions, etc. So then they want to make you feel guilty and sorry for it, because they're looking for that sympathy, because a sympathetic person would feel good about their contributions and reward them with gratitude, which is what ESFJs are looking for, the validation that comes from, you know, from someone being grateful to them for their contributions and their supportive nature and being generative for those people. And if people don't appreciate their generativity, if they're not given gratitude for the generativity, they end up feeling themselves, and like they're not good enough, so they want to make other people around them not feel good enough at the same time. And because it's like, hey, if I don't feel good enough, no one feels good enough, because, and I'm owed gratitude, I'm owed thanks, I am owed sympathy, basically. So they're always trying to extract sympathy for other people whenever possible, and this is what ESFJs oftentimes do. And sometimes they do this with this manipulative tactic known as the covert contract. You can learn a lot about that in the season 7 episode for ESFJs, which I believe is season 7 episode 6, because I think I had an introduction episode for season 7 for Virtue and Vice. So I believe it's episode 6. It might be episode 5, but I really think it's episode 6 in season 7. You can watch that on the playlist here on this channel. Etc. So that's kind of a big deal. Guys, when you're asking questions in the chat, keep them relevant to the questions that I'm answering, if you can. If you want to get your questions answered in a stream like this, become an Acolyte member. And we're having a huge promotion right now because it's Cyber Week right now. And that's at csjoseph.life/essentials. You get Journeyman and Acolyte, as well as 30 minutes of coaching with me right now. csjoseph.life/essentials for just $300. It's the best offer that we've ever done, and we brought it back for Cyber Week. And also, I think we also may actually make the Essentials bundle available basically through just this stream from now on after this promotion. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, csjoseph.life/essentials, so you guys can get your to be answered on this stream. But you guys are allowed to ask questions to the questions that I am answering on the stream to hopefully increase the quality of my answers. So have at it. Anyway, next question is, why does SI Demon struggle believing in God? Which is an amazing question, actually. It's a huge, huge question. SI Demons really, really struggle with it, because SI Demon, as a demon function, introverted sensing is all introverted sensing demon to actually put their faith in anything, because they don't even have faith in themselves. They don't care about having faith in themselves. They're all about willpower. And they want to will their way through life consistently and get through anything as a result of, you know, putting their will, exerting their will on the environment, exerting their will in the world, so they can and have full freedom putting their faith into a higher power, basically. And also because introverted sensing demon is oftentimes about self-neglect and not taking care of oneself. That's why introverted sensing demons oftentimes do not get sleep. They really care about other people's comfort, so they only allow themselves to get sleep if they know that them getting sleep is helping someone else be comfortable, etc. And then they themselves will get sleep, and they won't neglect themselves because they're not neglecting another person. And when you have that whole, you know, setup in your brain as an INJ type, as an INTJ or an INFJ, it makes very little room left over for them to believe in a higher power, to believe in God, basically, or God's existence, which God absolutely does exist. I actually prove God's existence in season 17 playlist, in the first five episodes of season 17, first four episodes, guaranteed first four episodes, but I think it's the first five episodes where I actually use Jungian analytical psychology to prove the existence of God. Even Carl Jung, the father of the Jungian analytical psychology, actually believed in the existence of God, and he made his argument for the existence of God in his book Ion, which is A-I-O-N, Ion, which actually is the basis for the four sides of the mind theory. Four sides is entirely based on that book, and it's like the first five or six chapters of that book, specifically, where you do that. The rest of the book is actually Jesus versus the Antichrist, which is a very interesting situation. And what Jordan Peterson claims is the most terrifying book he's ever read. Therefore, I recommend you guys read that book. That's why they struggle believing in God. And honestly, in order for SI Demon to not struggle believing in God, what they have to be around is other SI users who do put their faith in God, and they essentially use their expert sensing and fury to borrow the faith of people around them. And that is basically how they are able to have faith in God, because they see other people consistent with their faith, practicing what they preach, leading by example. And it's at that point that they're able to actually decide that they actually can put their faith into a higher power. And that's ultimately what they need to do. So only surrounding themselves with people of faith and seeing those people of faith having that example, can an INTJ also put their faith in God as a result. Next question is, why does NI Hero have problems with more freedom? Again, another INTJ, INFJ question. Well, the reason why, is because they need boundaries. Because if NI Hero is boundless and has zero boundaries, they're actually aimless. So the more freedom an NI Hero has, the more aimless they actually become. Why do you think that INTJs with their SE inferior and INFJs with their SE inferior are constantly looking for feedback from other people based on how other people react to them in order for them to fine-tune and aim their introverted intuition sniper rifle hero function? Because they need to aim it in the right place, right? In the right direction. The only way that's going to happen is if they have boundaries, and they need to know what those boundaries are. You know, INFJs really need other people to set standards and set precedent with them so that they know with how to behave and adjust their behavior. INTJs need to know what the rules are so that they can know how they themselves can behave, so that they can have proper aim for their willpower. Without those boundaries, they actually end up becoming entirely aimless. So when NI Hero ends up having too much freedom, they become basically aimless, and they don't even know where to start. And they end up waking up at 40 years old, 50 years old, wondering where their entire life went, because they've been aimless the entire time, and they're doomed to be this wanderer of the earth, essentially, in their life, constantly wandering, because they're not basically allowing themselves to submit or surrender. We talked about INFJ surrender earlier. NI Hero needs to be willing to surrender and surrender to boundaries. And by surrender to boundaries, they actually are able to be more precise, where they are able to aim themselves in their life and actually are able to achieve happiness. Without that, the INJ will never actually be able to do that. So that's why they have more problems with more freedom, because they become aimless, okay? Next question, why must we as human beings suffer? Oh my God. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of reasons. And basically, humanity is to suffer because we are to learn. A lot of people are like, well, how can God be real if he creates an earth like this where, you know, there's so many problems? That's because, you know, God is a father, God is a daddy, and the creator is a daddy, and trying to make sure that we are being reared as children, you know, properly. That's what life is all about, actually. That's why we suffer. We should actually be very grateful for the earth, because we could actually lose the earth. What happens when our race is actually transported to a prison planet, which is way less than the earth, doesn't even have the sun in the sky, and it's always cold all the time, and it's just absolutely miserable on that planet, right? That's what hell really is. You want to be in that situation? So that's why we suffer, okay? Next question, how do fathers turn the hearts to the hearts of their sons. And how can fathers be a better father? Basically, it's through leadership. And we learned this through UCT recently, introverted sensing, introverted intuition, introverted thinking, and introverted feeling are known as the masculine functions, basically. And what a father needs to do is learn how to hone each of the four masculine functions within his own psyche to be a source, and teach his son to be a source of FI morals, introverted intuition, willpower, introverted thinking, logic, and truth, as well as introverted sensing, self-discipline, so that their sons can actually become a complete man and generate a lot of value, so that their sons can actually become high value men. It's literally through how to proper father your sons. And that's how you do that. But the problem is we live in a fatherless generation. We live in a fatherless society. And because of fatherlessness, you know, there is basically nobody around to actually teach masculinity to their sons. And that's literally how fathers need to do. If you have a heart for your son, teach him masculinity. But that means you yourself are going to have to be masculine. You yourself are going to have to learn how to master your own introverted functions for their benefit. All right. Back on a new network there. Sorry for losing the stream, guys, but it's back. All right. So we're back. Sorry about that. Anyway, as fathers turn their hearts to sons, they need to learn how to be masculine, and they can learn how to be masculine in our men's group. We have a nonprofit that's helping men rehabilitate their masculinity so they can be better fathers to their sons. And we teach masculinity to all of the men. To do that, join our Discord server at discord.gg/egohackers. Get on the Discord and then ask for, hey, how do I get into the men's group? And somebody should be able to direct you from that point of view. So yeah. All right, next question is, how do INFPs measure where they are at in life? So, well, if you're IP banned from the server, then you'll have to open a ticket. Email support at csjoseph.life to open a ticket to see if you can not be banned anymore. Maybe they'll give you a second chance. So how do INFPs measure where they're at? Well, I mean, do they have feelings of powerlessness? That's the first question. If you have feelings of powerlessness, you're not really very far in your life. But if you feel powerful, you're a lot more further in your life, basically. And honestly, INFPs should be focusing on being more subconscious focused and as a really good measure of where they're at in their life. Because if you have the reputation for being lazy or the reputation for being slothful, you need to earn the right to relax. You need to earn the right to be slothful, basically. And you do that through leadership. If you're an INFP and you're a leader, that's how you measure success. If you are not a leader and actually a follower and expecting other people to lead you, that's not really going to work. Now, if you're a woman, that's different, but especially for INFP men, you know, that's how you measure success as an INFP man, absolutely. So the next question is, how can an SDUF INTJ befriend a suffering UDUF ENTP? It's very simple. Help the ENTP become subconscious focused. And you do this by strengthening the ENTP to a point where they are the envy in the room, and then they are a lot kinder to other people. Encourage the ENTP to be as kind as possible to everyone around them, even if those other people don't deserve it, because the ENTP is likely bitter and basically comparing effort dicks with everybody, because they're all about contribution and comparing effort dicks, and that's really annoying. So when an ENTP is doing that, tell them that they can't do that anymore. And regardless of what they judge, who is deserving of what, basically, that's ultimately what they have to learn to do. They have no right, basically, to judge their neighbor and say who deserves what, even though ENTPs do it all the time. Instead, they should be compassionate and kind to people regardless. Now, that gets a little bit, that muddies the waters. If they're unconscious developed and they become UDSF, they can still be malevolent to other people, but they're actually compassionately malevolent to other people. And malevolence means being critical. So they can be still critical of other people, but they're being critical to other people for their benefit. Compassion is behind the criticism, basically. And there actually can be kindness in that criticism, right? So this is what this SDUF INTJ needs to do when they're befriending a suffering UDUF ENTP. to help them get out of their suffering, they need to encourage them to become subconscious focused. That is the answer to that question. Next question. What advice to give an ISFP daughter who is about to turn 18? Don't be a hoe. That would be my first answer to that question. Basically, explain to her the life phases of women. Explain to her about break phase, which is 18 to 20, when a woman breaks up with her high school man or whatever her boyfriend is because she's about to enter into her sexual peak. Explain to her that she should not be wasting her fertile years and being a hoe during her hoe years, which is ages 20 to 25. Most women end up going to college and wasting their fertile years on a bullshit education for them to get a job that they don't even want, and typically. And when that happens, it kind of sucks to be them, because a college-educated woman actually reduces her value to men in general, actually. Because in Western society, if you are a college-educated woman, you have a 90% chance of, especially in the United States of America, a 90% chance of divorcing your husband anyway. So, and men are picking up on that and not willing to commit to marriage at all. And it's all because you are parenting your ISFP daughter terribly and allowing her to be a hoe in her 20 to 25 year range, which is her best, most fertile years. So she should be encouraged to actually attract a high value man and be his wife, essentially. And if she wants to have a career after she has children, she can. She needs to prioritize her fertility above her career. Fertility, then career. Most women are doing it the other way around. They're doing career, then fertility. The problem is that they have their career, they get to about age 29, but all of a sudden their looks can't compete with younger girls anymore because the new girl turns 18 and 21 every single day. And this needs to be explained to your ISFP daughter, because she has no consequential awareness, because she has expert intuition trickster, and she is not aware of the consequences, the long-term consequences of her actions. She needs to protect her virginity. And any man who takes her virginity is basically essentially having a blood pact in the eyes of God as a result of taking her virginity and knowing full well that that woman basically belongs to him, because a man is technically married to a woman if he has sex with her, especially as a virgin. That woman belongs to him at that point, and she is his responsibility, basically, in the eyes of God. So as a result, she should probably work on that. Tell her about epiphany phase when she hits 26 and starts realizing that she, if she doesn't use her fertile years, her highest fertility, to attract a high value man, she's not gonna be able to compete with younger girls anymore. And high value men will always prefer younger girls. And so the higher value men, they typically start showing up in their sexual prime, which is age 36 to 42. And for the first time in their life, they're able to attract the 20 to 25 year olds that they are never able to attract in their 20s, and the first time that they actually can. So they're going to be going for your ISFP daughter. You should be totally okay with that and let him be a wife to that man, essentially. Or you can tell her to go get a career and this ruin her life and ruin her fertility. And then all she'll be able to attract is low value men, losers, basically in her late 20s, and then statistically get married at 29 so she can still claim that she got married in her 20s. And that's a horrible situation. Don't do that. And then if she's college educated, she's going to divorce her man anyway. That's also a bullshit situation. So that sucks. And then she'll be a little secure for the first 5 years of her 30s and then divorce her husband anyway, because 87% or 83% of divorce in the United States of America is initiated by women anyway. Great. And then she'll just be a lone cat mom and dog mom for the rest of her life. And then you, as her parent, or your parents will end up basically supporting your spinster of a daughter, essentially. And she won't be able to help you in your old age or anything, because she's basically a burden on your life because you raised her wrong. Congratulations, you played yourself. Don't raise your daughters this way. It's actually stupid. It's actually stupid. And you know, they're raised by public school to think about career instead of fertility. And they're actually, you know, encouraged to have sexual relations without commitment. And you know, it just ends up becoming a huge problem. And then you're basically condemning your daughter to being a pump and dump for the rest of your life. So that's really terrible. So be aware of her extrovert intuition trickster that's not really aware of consequences to her actions, especially her sexual actions, because sexuality is a woman's only actual agency. A man does not give a damn, especially a high-value man, does not give a damn about a woman's career. They will never care. And men never want to be friends with women anyway. They can't be friends with women. And women all think that they can be friends with men. No, they can't. No, they can't. And if they think so, they're probably with weak men. Because the reality situation is men can't be friends with women. That's a fact. We actually teach this in our women's group, which is rehabilitating women into their femininity. If you want to get in on the women's group, go to discord.gg/egohackers and ask to be shown how to get into the women's group. Once you get into the women's group, go into the requirements channel, do all of the requirements. Learn how to be a feminine woman so you're not screwed in your life. There's just no thanks. You can't be, a man can't be friends with women. Your ISFP daughter is being basically bullshit by all the propaganda out there in public school and in college or whatever, and getting completely screwed. Screwed by men who don't actually care about her. Screwed by men that aren't committed to her. Is that really what you want? You really want a hoe for a daughter? Well, that's what you're doing if you're not teaching her these concepts. Basically, it means you're a bad parent. You're a shit parent. So don't be a shit parent. Do it right. Okay? Next question. How can INFJs reach their purpose without distraction of feeling the pain of others? They can't. You can't. Impossible. Literally impossible. INFJs must reach their purpose with the distraction of feeling the pain of others. Just the thing is just remember, this is actually talked about in season 7, the INFJ episode, which I believe is season 7, episode 12, or episode 13. It's likely episode 13. And it talks about INFJ integrity versus corruption. You have to learn how to be an INFJ who actually has integrity in your life and be a person of high character, regardless of the pain of other people in your life. But make sure that you are connected to people through bonds and not attachment. So bonds are two-way street relationships where you are getting everything back that you give or getting a return on investment, getting more out of it than what you're getting. Again, blessing versus curse. We talked about that earlier in the stream, blessing versus a curse. Organize every person in your life from that perspective. You will always feel the pain of others. And that's just the reality of the situation. Get over yourself as an INFJ. Literally get over it, okay? Because you will always feel the pain of others. You have to learn how to live with that. And you have to learn that you can't help everyone. You can't save everyone. You have to learn that too. Only some people should be helped. Only some people can be saved. And that's based on you being connected to them and whether or not you're getting a return on investment from your connection with them. That's the truth. Can you handle that, INFJs? Can you really handle that truth? Because you usually can't. And you end up having a lot of losers in your life that you end up mirroring and you take on their bad habits and you end up destroying your life and you end up becoming a person of horrible moral character, lacking identity entirely. Whereas if you're around higher value people, then all of a sudden, guess what? You yourself become a person of high value. It's not hard, okay? But stop paying attention to all these people. Get the losers out of your life, okay? These people that are dragging you down, get rid of them. And see, the INFJs struggle with this because they're more comfortable being around people who are beneath them because then they could feel valuable. They could feel not worthless. They could feel useful by being there for all those people, you know, that are less than them. And they spend all their time with people less than them, but then those people end up dragging them down. INFJs, you need to be around people who are consistently better than you and higher than you. It was higher social status and higher capability than you are, so you can mirror those people so you yourself can get better. And then you should stop comparing yourself to everybody else. You should instead compare yourself to yourself every single day and guarantee that you're better than you were the previous day. You need to live in the present and stop living in the past. And stop also living into your far future. You need to be present right now. You can be aware of your future and the direction you want to go, but at the end of the day, you need to be in the present moment because the present moment is what's going to determine where you are going anyway. So make sure you're actually doing that. Holy shit, it's not hard. And I've talked about this so many times with INFJs over and over and over. Watch the Season 7 Virtue and Vice episode in the Season 7 playlist on this YouTube channel and on the podcast to get educated so that you stop doing this, okay? Stop being with people who are beneath you. Get with people who make you insecure because they are better than you. The only way you are going to get better than yourself is if you are with people who are better than you. That's reality. Get over yourselves, okay? So yes, you can reach your purpose with the distraction of feeling pain of others. There is no such thing as reaching your purpose without the distraction of feeling the pain of others. There's no such thing. It's impossible for INFJs. It's bullshit. It's not going to happen, okay? Bullshit. You can't do that. Next question. How can ISTP man balance life with business and women? Oh my God. It's about prioritization. You're not supposed to be balancing your life with business and women. There's no such thing as balance, ISTPs, in that regard. That's bullshit. That's your extrovert intuition trickster talking. No, you're not aware of the long-term consequences. As an ISTP man, there's no such thing as balancing business and women. There is only business as your top priority, as is, you know, your purpose and what you're able to, you know, what skills you're able to confer and mentor others, you know, throughout your life, which is what your business should actually be based upon. And then women are just kind of a byproduct. They're a lower priority. Put your purpose and your mission above women in your life. If you're trying to balance out your business with your women in your life, you're going to lose both. And that's what I would call idiocy. As an ISTP man, don't be an idiot. Do it right, okay? It's all about prioritization. Prioritize your business and your purpose and your mission. Women will just be a byproduct of that, and a woman will follow your lead, and she will be knocking down your door to come to you, and you will never have to feel like or even think that you have to balance anything with women. If you balance your business with women in your life, you'll lose both, okay? So that's bullshit. That's bullshit. INFJ business, well, improving other people's lives. Look at how Simon Sinek conducts business. Do what he says. Also, INFJs, read The Power of Now. Read that book. It actually helps, okay? Read that. And I know that's Eckhart Tolle, even though I just shat on Eckhart Tolle pretty hard, but do that. And I believe Tony Robbins also has a similar book, The Power of Now, or something similar to that. Read that too, so that you INFJs can remain present. You have to remain present in the moment. That's the only way you will be successful in life and be able to become a top performer. Be present, okay? Next question. What is the difference between a subconscious focused or unconscious focused ESFP, okay? Well, if they are subconscious focused, they are not caring about popularity very much. They're actually very modest, okay? They don't care about popularity. Whereas the unconscious focused ESFP will put popularity above everything and center their entire life around being popular, even though being popular is actually entirely worthless, okay? It's entirely worthless, all right? So don't do that. You can't take your popularity with you when you can die, but you can benefit from modesty because you're helping other people be modest and helping other people do more with less, basically. And that ultimately will actually cause you to become popular eventually, because you're helping people do more with less in your life. That's what a subconscious focused ESFP does. You should probably do that, okay? Definitely do that. Next question. Do certain types opt for different relationship pairs? You know, I would have actually have said yes to that when talking about the 8 sexually compatible relationships. Golden pair, pedagogue relationship, also known as the companion relationship, and then also the natural pair, and then the intrigue relationship, and then the respect relationship, the trust relationship, the challenge relationship, and the kindred relationship. And but because of UCT, universal compatibility theory, talking about feminine primary functions and masculine primary functions, I would answer this question entirely different. In which case, you'd actually have to learn about that in the Cutting Edge November 2023 podcast episode, which is available to Journeyman members. csjoseph.life/members to become a Journeyman member. Or you can get in on our amazing deal we have, which is Journeyman membership, Act Like membership, and 30 minutes of coaching with me, which I could type you and do your personality type and your octogram for $300 right now. csjoseph.life/essentials. csjoseph.life/essentials. And that's for our Cyber Week promotion that we're doing right now. And we'll probably only ever promote it during these Acolyte streams anyway, because y'all need that kind of help. But we're not really sure we're going to do that yet. So get the deal while you still can. While this promotion is going, csjoseph.life/essentials, okay? But I would have said yes. Do certain types opt for different relationship pairs? I would have said yes. But because of masculine primary functions and feminine primary functions, all of a sudden, we can make the argument that the trust relationship, also known as the benefactor relationship, or even an intrigue relationship, could actually be just as powerful as a golden pair, for example. Just as powerful, because they have the latent compatibility between their feminine primary functions and their masculine primary functions. Which is also interesting. If someone is unconscious focus. Like if a woman is unconscious focused, getting in a relationship with a man where their functions don't match, eventually, over time, she will transform into her subconscious focus, where then it would actually have compatibility between her masculine, her feminine functions and his masculine functions as he leads her as a masculine man in her life. And men actually have the ability to change the cognitive focus of women in their lives literally as a result of their masculine functions, which is amazing. That's incredible, right? And I particularly know a UDUF ISFP woman, and she's awesome, but she is transforming into subconscious focus literally as a result of, oh, thank you so much. This is perfect. Yeah. Hot tea. It's my mini campfire.
It's got a lot of different things in it.
Awesome. I got my mini campfire because it is freaking cold. It's snowing. Can you guys see the snow back there? It is insane. Insanely snow. It's not insane snow. It's just, well, yeah, it's a blizzard. It is tea time. Thanks to Laser Gun for the tea. So, but yeah, like Bayonet. Bayonet, she's ISFP, she's UDUF, and she is transforming into UDSF right before my eyes. It's incredible. It's incredible to watch that transformation as I lead her, basically, and she is changing from this UDUF to UDSF over time. It's an amazing experience. It's awesome. And yes, it is like I'm camping. Yes, very much. Ah, exactly what the doctor ordered. So yeah. So do certain types offer different relationship pairs? Not in the old context. In the new context, it's based on masculine primary versus feminine primary functions according to universal compatibility theory. We have a channel for UCT on our Discord. Go to discord.gg/egohackers. And then once you get onto the server and you verify and get through welcome one of one or one of two and welcome two of two channels for your verifications, you can go right into the UCT channel and then just go to the pinned message, which is the first message in the channel, and just read that entire channel. That's where you can get free knowledge on UCT right now, or just become a Journeyman member and get educated by watching the Cutting Edge podcast episode for November 2023, where we discuss UCT at length. It is awesome, and it is very worth it. Please check it out. Next question. Romantic relationship between a male INTJ and a unconscious developed ISTP girl. Okay, well, these people are likely mistyped. I would like to make a statement about this. INTJs, out of all of the 16 types, are the absolute worst at typing themselves and typing other people. They are typically dog shit at psychoanalysis, even though out of everyone, they honestly think, because of their TI critic, that they know the most about this, especially INTJ women, where they actually think that they can type people accurately. They cannot. They are terrible. And they're so bad that when they take personality tests, like at Ucha, Ucha.app, or even the 16personalities.com, that personality test, they are consistently scoring as ENFP. INTJ women do this all the time. It's frustrating. And then they start making life decisions based on incorrect input, incorrect knowledge. It's pathetic and terrible, okay? But male INTJs are pretty bad too. They're really bad at typing. That's why they hire me to do it. And INTJs consistently are actually like our top coaching client is INTJs, because they're just terrible. They're terrible at it. They don't know how to type themselves. And what makes them think that they can type other people? They're terrible. They're dog shit. They're dog shit at it. It's ridiculous. So if you're an INTJ and you don't even know you're an INTJ and you're just bad at typing, you're just making horrible life decisions. But if you actually do know you're an INTJ and still think you could type people, you probably can. You probably never will be able to. Like, and I, even though, you know, they are the jack of all trades, master of all, and that, you know, with practice, I'm sure they could get it eventually. I'm sure with practice, sure. But they're so quick, making snap judgments because they're triple progression types and pragmatic at the same time, that they love them their shortcuts. INTJs love them their shortcuts. They take too many shortcuts and they lack patience, which is what you need to properly psychoanalyze someone, because they have to sit there and endure a stream of consciousness coming out of another person. And they have extroverted feeling trickster, so good luck even inducing the other person into a stream of consciousness from which they'd be able to accurately type somebody anyway. So basically, their psyche is not really structured to being able to have mastery in terms of psychoanalysis. It would basically take an entire life of practice, consistent practice, and have the patience of a saint, which they don't have at all. They're actually entirely impatient to be able to accomplish that. And they'd have to learn patience. They'd have to convert to Buddhism, let's be honest, to even have a chance. I say that as a joke, but seriously, the principles taught by Buddhism actually go a long way to that end. So this question is entirely silly, because we don't actually know if these people are being typed properly. Because the idea of an INTJ being in a sexual relationship with an ISTP woman is unheard of. It just doesn't happen. It's not a thing. It's not a thing, guys. It's not a thing. So no. No. But let's assume. Let's assume for a second. Let's assume that this is actually a thing. What is a romantic relationship like between a male INTJ and a UD ISTP girl? It is hell. It is hell. It's hell. It's absolute hell. Run for the hills. Don't do it. I mean, yeah, she's pretty good, to hear her thoughts and watch her process information, and she'll go out of her way to make you feel good. But sexually, there's no sexual compatibility here whatsoever. It's a complete waste of time. But chances are, this is not an ISTP girl. This is probably like an ISTJ or maybe an ESTJ. You know, it's just not a thing. So I don't even believe in the premise of this question. I just don't. But honestly, that's what the relationship is like. It's hell. I mean, there's no sexuality there. Like, it's terrible. They have no sexual compatibility. It's like two painters trying to paint each other with the brushes, and there's no canvas. There's no canvas. The canvas is the SI user, and they're both NI users, and they're both exerting each other's will upon each other in the bedroom, which is horrible, and they're eventually going to get sick of it, and then eventually she's not going to be sexually fulfilled because sexuality is her only agency, and then her NI child's going to use her hypergamy sexual strategy to upgrade from the INTJ man eventually. Which is, eventually means that it's inevitable for the ISTP woman to cheat on the INTJ, basically. Another reason as to why this relationship is hell. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Ah, the mini campfire. Yes, yes. Someone make an emoji on the Discord server, :mini campfire. All right, let's see here. I think I saw a cool question. I want to scroll up and take a look at it. Okay, let's see here. What is it? What is it? Oh, no. Why does the golden pair burn out so fast? I actually have an entire video about golden pair compatibility. Search golden pair and watch all the golden pair videos that I have here on the YouTube channel, as that explains, okay? It explains that. Go watch that video. I explain golden pair compatibility and how it works, all the highest highs and the lowest lows, and all of those details are right there in that video. It is not a waste of time. It's very comprehensive. You can get through it. I highly recommend you check out that video, okay? How can you stand up against unnecessary drama coming from SDJs? SDJs sure love grandstanding. You just take away their opportunity to grandstand. They love grandstanding, trying to cultivate public opinion to support their position instead of admitting that their position sucks to begin with. You know, there's a girl on the Discord server by the name of Hadis. She does that all the time. It's my number one problem with her. It's my number one problem with her. She's an ISTJ. Basically, don't stick around while they're grandstanding. It's that simple to avoid that drama, folks. Like, just don't do it. So Anyway, folks, that concludes the Acolyte question stream for December 2023. Do ESTJ men hide their attraction? Well, no, they're just trying to coquet you if they're any child. Is there another way to improve the inferior of an INFP? yeah, learn self-acceptance for yourself instead of relying on other people's acceptance. That's how you do it. Is minding my own business more masculine? Yes, it is. Absolutely is minding your own business. It is more masculine, of course. But yeah, folks, that's it for the stream. Thank you all for watching and listening. And I'll see you guys next month for the Acolyte question stream for the new year, January 2024. And we will get more of these in. How many questions we get through tonight? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Yeah. So lots of questions to go through. I mean, so get your guys' questions in. If you are Acolyte members, keep getting your questions in so we can keep the stream going. And keep posting them, and we are going to continue having fun with this stream. So anyway, thanks for watching, and I'll see you guys next time.